This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. Religious services, almost for any faith, typically require a gathering. Jewish tradition says you need a quorum of 10 people before worship can take place. In Islam, Friday prayers should be held somewhere open and accessible to everyone in the community. And communion in the Catholic Church usually requires worshipers to drink from the same cup or take bread from the hands of a priest. Well, social distancing is disrupting a lot of the familiar parts of life now, including weekly worship. But you're not going to find much advice on streaming services in Scripture. So what happens to a congregation that can't congregate? And how are religious organizations providing community support right now when sending volunteers out into the community might do more harm than good? We're tapping into our 1A Across America network to bring you voices from across the country for this conversation. 1A Across America is a collaboration with six member stations that helps bring more community voices to the national conversation. So let's go now to Angela Denker. She's a pastor at Grace Lutheran Church in Brownton, Minnesota. That's a small rural church about an hour west of Minneapolis. Pastor Denker, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Abdullah Al-Muhmadi is the imam at the Muslim Community Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He leads thousands of followers in that region. Imam Abdullah, thanks for being with us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Shira Stutman is also here. She's senior rabbi at Sixth and I Synagogue in Washington, D.C. Rabbi Shira, thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
So a pastor, an imam, and a rabbi walk into a radio studio, am I right?
Right. It's a bad joke.
This is the start of a joke.
It's not a bad joke, Rabbi. It's a good joke.
Sorry. Yes.
It's a joke nonetheless. Pastor Denker, you've got that small congregation in rural Minnesota. You've been connecting with congregants via Facebook Live. How's that going? Are people able to get through and have a good experience?
Yeah, I've been really proud of my congregation. You know, we have a lot of farmers, a lot of people living in rural America, and I have spent a few minutes on the phone with some of my 80-something members, you know, helping them to friend request me and learn how to access the video. And also, because Facebook makes live videos available to those who are not on Facebook, simply by sending a link out to our congregation, they've been able to access that way as well. So I've been really encouraged by the level of engagement in not only my church, but a lot of other rural churches across America.
So that means that people can join live for a service or some kind of discussion or gathering, but also if they're not there, they can watch the video later and just sort of relive it, be part of it after the fact?
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And they don't need to be a Facebook member, which is nice for some people.
Pastor Denker, I'm told also you've been kind of tinkering with drive-up worship services. What does that mean?
Yeah, so that's been another sort of example of the ways that things continue to evolve for those of us in the church, just every single day with the changing recommendations regarding this pandemic. So I'm part of the Southwestern Minnesota Lutheran Synod, and one of our churches had this fantastic idea for drive-up worship where they were having different stations and having the ability, actually, as a joke, they gave out a roll of toilet paper, but they also provided communion. They provided some, you know, food for people who are not able to have access to a safe meal. They provided prayer. But even in the last few days, you know, I know that suddenly drive-up worship is also looking like maybe that's not the safest thing for us to be doing when we're encouraging people to shelter in place. And the nature of faith communities is that, you know, if we're in our cars, it's really hard not to get out. And I know that the churches that did that really did take all the necessary precautions. But we're just evolving each and every day with how to continue to be the church and serve the world and spread the love of Jesus, when so many of the ways that we've done that for generations don't work.
Imam Abdullah, Friday prayers happen every week. Are you doing this virtually? Can you do that? Does it have to take place in the mosque? What are the rules and how are you adapting to them now?
My community is kind of like the exact opposite of what Pastor Denker described her community to be like. We are on campus of the University of Michigan, University of Michigan being, you know, one of the top universities being known to all. So our congregation is affiliated with the university and, you know, professors and working professionals around the area. Now, the issue that we were running into last week, not this past Thursday, but the Thursday prior to that, when we were planning on how to accommodate our Friday congregants, we typically have two Friday prayer services. The reason being, we don't have enough space to accommodate both of them at the same time. So we decided instead of two, we'll have four. We'll minimize it to, at that time, the CDC had announced that the limited should be, crowd should be limited to no more than 100. So we decided we'll cap it at 100. Whoever can make it, great. And whoever can, they can go to a different mosque. They mm-hmm. can do something else. Or we can try accommodating them with a fifth or a sixth Friday congregation. Mm-hmm. Come Thursday night, it drastically changed. There are multiple cases found in Michigan, in particular the county that we are living in. And we decided that we would have to cancel it altogether.
So there's some lots of adjustments going on there. I want to make sure to get Rabbi Shira in. Passover is coming, yep. Rabbi Shira. That's not celebrated in the synagogue, but in the home. The joke going around this year is that the traditional reciting of 10 plagues can be pretty much narrowed down to one.
Well, I think that Passover will feel entirely different to anyone who's celebrating this year. And as you said, Passover is usually celebrated more in the home than in the synagogue. And so as opposed to Easter, which is when people gather together, there is a sort of a way that families are encouraged and people are encouraged already to be together in smaller spaces, except the problem is that even families can't gather the way they usually gather. And I was thinking this past week that, you know, the idea of Passover is for Jews and Jewish adjacent people, whoever is at the Seder table, to sort of hear our foundational story, which is that we were slaves and we were freed, and therefore it's our job to work for freedom for people around the world. And one of the main commandments of Passover is to feel like we were actually enslaved. And unfortunately, too many of us do have that experience in a day-to-day way, but a lot of us don't. We sort of live privileged lives. And the difference with Passover this year is that many of us are feeling like we are under quarantine, right? We are enslaved in a certain sort of way, and Passover will have a whole new meaning.
So what's going on at Sixth and I Synagogue in Washington, D.C.? Are you Zooming, Facebooking now?
We are 99% Zooming everything that we do because our primary constituency are those people in the DMV area who can sign in to our different Zoom accounts. And we've gone totally virtual. So we have classes happening at least once, if not twice a day, Torah study, services are happening, and people are able to participate in all different sorts of ways. I'll just say one last thing, which is that the chat function in Zoom has actually become one of the holiest places around because it gives people the opportunity to do what people actually do in synagogue anyway, which is whisper to each other during services. But they're like whispering to each other on chat throughout the whole service, which I think actually makes it even more meaningful.
Side chatter during services at Sixth and I Synagogue in Washington, D.C. Reverend Amy Kegler writes, there is a lot of debate going on in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and a lot of other denominations, I'm sure, about the appropriateness of consecration via the internet. I'm learning just how deeply we need to witness the presence of Jesus with us right now, and I'm also consecrating anything that people can find in order to do those consecrations. We're getting messages from the faithful and from pastors all over America. We're going to get to a lot of those, and we're also going to hear more from Pastor Angela Denker with the Grace Lutheran Church in Brownton, Minnesota, Imam Abdullah Al-Muhmadi with the Muslim Community Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Shira Stutman, Senior Rabbi at Sixth and I Synagogue in Washington, D.C. More from our people of the cloth, more from you in just a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A. Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know. On the News Roundup, find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
The coronavirus pandemic is changing everything really fast. So we have created a podcast where you can hear conversations and stories from NPR journalists who are covering the pandemic, the public health fight against it, and how the world is coping. I'm your host, Kelly McEvers. Listen and subscribe to Coronavirus Daily from NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. Most organized religions require followers to assemble every week for worship, but social distancing has put a stop to that. Ryan tweets, our pastors host the worship services on Zoom meeting, not webinar, and everybody broadcasts their live camera. It's amazing. And he includes a photo of about a dozen people in their little Hollywood squares, the Hollywood squares of worship there. We'll retweet that on the Twitter feed at 1A. And Hiker writes, the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Falmouth on Cape Cod held our Sunday church service using virtual app, Zoom. We had a wonderful time as we had members joining us from Florida. We were able to see each other online. Pastor Denker, you traveled the country for your book called Red State Christians. I got to ask, you know, some mega churches have not only resisted orders to close, but have sort of been gleefully defiant. I want to play you some sound from Pastor Rodney Howard Brown of The River at Tampa Bay in Florida.
We are not stopping anything. I got news for you. This church will never close. The only time the church is closed is when the rapture's taking place. This Bible school is open because we're raising up revivalists, not pansies.
Yeah. The River at Tampa Bay held services again yesterday. Lisa writes, I'm a practicing Christian. I believe in God, but I also believe in free will. We have a choice, and God is not going to protect us from our own stupidity. Wise up. Sit at home. Read your Bible. You don't need to go share a cup of wine. Bad stuff happens to good people. Don't believe me, says Lisa? Read Job. Pastor Denker, you can probably hear in my voice, I don't want to editorialize too much, but Pastor Rodney Howard Brown at the River in Tampa Bay makes me kind of mad. That sort of gleeful, cheerful, anti-science cheerleading he's doing in front of his congregation there. That's all I have to say about it. What do you hear when you hear that? Since you've gone out around the country among your fellow Christians and have done some reporting.
Yeah, so I've been to the River at Tampa Bay. It's chapter 2 in my book, so I'm all too familiar. But what I have to say is that Pastor Rodney Howard Brown is not only anti-science, but he's also anti-Christian in the way that he is characterizing the church. Because this is what I'll have to say, is that my church will never close, and the church will never close in this country because the church is not a building. The word that we use for church comes from the Greek word ekklesia, which means assembly. And all that church means is a gathering of people who are faithful. And guess what? God has enabled software engineers to be able to create an online gathering and an assembly. And let me tell you, the Holy Spirit was active on my Facebook Live yesterday. So I think it's really irresponsible. It's really selfish. Rodney Howard Brown is a practitioner of the prosperity gospel, and I wouldn't be surprised if a big part of his motivation for continuing to worship in person is to make sure that he gets those donations.
We wish all of the members of that congregation, the River in Florida, good health. We hope that they stay infection-free. And if they're listening, I hope some of them stay home and worship in their own way. Imam Abdullah, some Islamic prayer can take place, of course, when you're on your own, alone. The Friday prayer is supposed to be in community. Let me in a little bit on the propriety, if you just can't get to a group or you just feel like it's not safe and maybe you're not on Facebook, just being devotional on your own right now, is that all right?
So in Islam, all of our worship, it's a very, what we consider a very practical religion, very easy to implement, very easy to follow. If an individual cannot make the congregational prayer, he has the option of praying it on his own or doing a small congregation within his own house or with his own family. Now, the only requirement that we have for having a big congregation is the Friday prayer, as you just mentioned. Now, when we cannot pray the Friday prayer in congregation, the substitute for that is the regular forenoon prayer that we have on a daily basis on the rest of the 6 days of the week. It is such that an individual, due to the certain circumstances that he is in, he will be getting the same reward from God that he would have if he had gone to the mosque and he had attended the Friday congregation, or he had attended any other congregational prayer. He can pray at home, he can pray with his family. Rather, that's what we are encouraging, that instead of having one mosque within the city of Ann Arbor, now you have the opportunity to make your house and to replicate that same feeling. Have your children at the same time give the call to prayer, and have one person from the family lead the prayer, lead the congregation, deliver the sermon, whatever the case be. Replicate that feeling within your household.
Well, Robin writes, my Reconstructionist synagogue has moved everything to Zoom. It works pretty well for the most part, but since it was designed for meetings and conferences, the system apparently inserts digital delays to keep people from talking over each other, and this makes unison chanting and singing a little bit difficult. And Lucy writes, my son is doing his bar mitzvah on April 4th. I'm hoping that the level of surrealism drives us to a higher level of mindfulness and spirituality. Rabbi Shira, a bar mitzvah in the time of coronavirus would be something.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I think. A bar mitzvah is not actually a ceremony. A bar mitzvah is a status. So anytime that a Jewish boy turns 13 or a Jewish girl turns 12, they automatically become bar mitzvah. So what you see happening when there's a big synagogue service is actually a celebration of a status that they have. So in a way, the idea of celebrating a bar mitzvah during this moment of COVID-19 can be extraordinarily meaningful, because what you're marking is that this child is becoming a teenager, able to make their own decisions to a certain extent out in the world. And one of the decisions is enforcing the Jewish value, the Jewish law of pikuach nefesh, of taking care of the human body, of each individual human, by sort of staying home and marking their bar mitzvah just with their family.
We're talking about faith traditions across America and congregations that can't get together in the time of coronavirus. Danielle writes this, our church has started streaming virtual services, but our family misses singing together. This is both fundamental as a part of our spiritual connection as well as a financial part of our lives, because I'm a paid member of the choir. This time of year is typically very busy for church musicians, and church closures is resulting in a significant loss of pay. And I've reached out to my church to see if they'll compensate me, but the church has also been hit financially with fewer donations. Pastor Danker, I don't know if you pass the plate normally in your congregation, but donations have to be a concern.
Yeah, we do. I'm grateful that I have a wonderful volunteer church secretary, church treasurer, and we have online giving options that had already been active prior to this whole crisis. And we do have some people also mailing in their offerings. We've gotten a few offerings mailed in already from the start of this crisis, and I'm so grateful to everybody who is continuing to be faithful. But I think that this whole concern and the message from the church musician as well brings up a broader problem in our country, which is that so many of the essential services that are so desperately needed in this time of epidemic, not only healthcare workers and education and childcare workers and grocery store workers, but also spiritual leaders, we have so defunded and devalued the role of spirituality and love in our culture. And so I know of pastors who've already taken pay cuts. I know of church staff members who are facing layoffs already. So I think that this brings up a broader question of how we can change our economy to value what is truly essential and not only what is profitable.
Imam Abdullah, I know that your congregation, like so many others across America, has community service as a huge part of what it does, not just worship, but community service. You can't really knock on doors or hold community meetings the way we used to a couple of weeks ago. So what does that look like for you?
So, Todd, one of the most essential pillars of Islam actually is being involved in the community, giving back to the community. It actually brings one of the quotes of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to mind, which I'll quote very briefly. He said, "None of you is a true believer until he loves for his brother that which he loves for himself." One of the things that we are doing, we're distributing food, where we have a solid group of youth volunteers ran through our youth committee. And what they're doing is we get food delivered to our mosque every morning, and about 150, 200 meals. And we assign routes to people who have signed to our delivery people based upon the individuals who have signed up. And all they do is they take the box and they drop it at the front door. They ring the doorbell and they leave. So there's no interaction between the two. Another thing that we've done is we also have quite a few employees who are paid by our mosque. And now, unfortunately, due to the crisis, them not offering their services, we have created an emergency fund for them. We have an emergency fund for the community in general, which we call our Zakah Fund. I mean, many individuals, they've been living week to week, paycheck to paycheck.
Community service so continues at the Muslim Community Center of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Rabbi Shira, just say a word.
I was just saying that, but there are serious ethical questions that arise. We just had a new baby in our community. Welcome, baby Estelle Ray. And usually what we would do as a community is we would create a meal train so that different families could bring food to the family. But what do you do in a time of COVID? Do you have 30 different families bring food to this new family? And so we decided instead that we were going to get gift cards to different local restaurants, which of course helps with the economy also. But also we figured it would be a little bit more hygienic, but we'd still get them fed.
Congregations all around America are adapting to this new normal, what's hopefully this temporary normal. We're going to talk more about how your congregation, if you have one, is adopting to coronavirus. Stay with us after a brief pause. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.
There are scientists out there trying to chart the frontiers of the unknown.
That's right. He has been to some places that no other human being has seen.
What does that feel like? I've been to places you don't know.
I'm Anoush Zamarodi. Join me as we journey through talks that take us to places uncharted. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen now.
We're talking about how coronavirus is affecting religious institutions, specifically how ceremonies, religious rituals, community service are being disrupted by social distancing. Robert says our 128-year-old church in West Covington had its service online this week. Our pastor was in the sanctuary in Kentucky, while I, the organist, was at my home in Cincinnati playing the hymns and interludes on our electric piano. Members of the congregation, including the pets, were praying along on Zoom. When Martin Luther wrote "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," one of the mortal ills he had in mind was surviving the plagues that were common in Germany at his time. And Dan writes this, "I have been going deeply into Buddhist and Hindu philosophy over the last year, and while I have an outpouring of love and compassion for all in these rough times, I have loved having more time at home to read and meditate and learn with my kids. Slowing down and taking a step back from our hectic everyday lives is certainly not all bad, in my opinion." There writes Dan, who's been reading into Hindu and Buddhist literature. Before we continue with this conversation, we want to play a poem that's been going viral this week. It is called Pandemic. Faith leader Lynn Unger wrote it last week while musing on coronavirus. She's a Unitarian Universalist minister. Here's Faith Unger reading her poem.
What if you thought of it as the Jews consider the Sabbath the most sacred of times? Cease from travel. Cease from buying and selling. Give up, just for now, on trying to make the world different than it is. Sing. Pray. Touch only those to whom you commit your life. Center down. And when your body has become still, reach out with your heart. Know that we are connected in ways that are terrifying and beautiful. You could hardly deny it now. Know that our lives are in one another's hands. Surely that has come clear. Do not reach out your hands. Reach out your heart. reach out your words. Reach out all the tendrils of compassion that move invisibly where we cannot touch. Promise this world your love, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, so long as we all shall live.
Pastor Danker, we talked a little bit about community service in Imam Abdullah's community there in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You're in a very rural community. Like the Imam, like the rabbi, you can't really go knocking on doors face-to-face or have the food drive in the church vestry these days. So what does it look like for you and your people?
Yeah, you know, my congregation, like many in rural America, is made up of a few large extended families. And what the blessing that I have in my church is that these families remain really connected. So I'm really relying on some of the younger family members to go and check on their grandparents, you know, if they can, while socially distancing, to call them. I've been doing a lot of phone call ministry with some of my elderly members. I have some examples of people in my congregation who are going to check in on people like through the window in assisted living facilities and bringing posters to say happy birthday to a loved one. We also have people in our congregation who are dealing with serious health issues. And so prayer is a huge part of the community service that we're continuing to do for one another, to share the prayer concerns that are happening. And one of the things that I'm seeing too is that a lot of the people who are engaged with my church right now are young people, are people in high school, are college students who've had to come home, people in their 20s, young parents. You know, there's sort of a stereotype out there that the church is only made up of older people. But in the ways that the church is finding how to adapt, it's giving opportunity for younger people to be involved. Somebody from my church went and picked up all of our food that we did have in our church outside area before the sanctuary to make sure that it got to the food shelf. And people are just thinking about each other in ways that maybe we haven't for a long time.
Rabbi Shira, people outside of Washington, D.C. might not know that your synagogue is right in the middle of the city in Washington, D.C., just 10 blocks or so from the White House, like right in the middle of things. What does community service look like now in this time of separation for your people?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, listening to Pastor Danker speaking, we have sort of the opposite problem, which is that instead of having a few close-knit families, Sixth and I, our religious programming predominantly serves people in their 20s and 30s. So we have thousands of people who are actually separated from their families, who are living alone. I forget who brought it up before, but so one of the things that we've been doing is really trying to watch out for people who are all by themselves. And so being in touch as much as possible, whether it's by Zoom gatherings or by text or by phone calls, you know, we're still unsure as to how to best serve people in terms of bringing food to other people's homes, because we want to make sure that everything that we do is safe. But as much as possible, we are being in touch with phone calls and with all sorts, you know, Instagram, all of the types of technologies that we can use just to see each other's faces and the pets. I think that the addition, I think it was one of the emails, the addition of people being able to hold their pets while we are in worship together is incredibly meaningful for people.
We've been talking a lot about potential stimulus money coming to all Americans to help through a difficult economic time. Rabbi Shira, I don't know the economic profile of your congregation. If it's a lot of people in their 20s and 30s on their own, maybe they have some dollars to spend, maybe they don't. What's the conversation like in your congregation?
So the conversation we've already started to have a little bit in our conversation, we have some people who, of course, like in any community worth their salt, we have people who are suffering financially. But we also have a good number of people who are employed and who don't see their employment ending anytime soon, thank God, whether it's because they work for the government or for whatever other reason. And so we've started to have conversation about ethically, how would we use any rebate money that came to us, right? If I know that my job is secure for the foreseeable future, should I bank that money or should I give it away? I think the Imam was talking about this, just like in Islam, Judaism has a required percentage of your income that you're supposed to give out. And is this part of that required income or of that required expenditure, or is it separate money, sort of a windfall that you don't need to keep as much of?
Imam Abdullah, before we go, I want to make sure that I ask you about Ramadan, which is coming up shortly. Has many practices associated with it, including fasting. But does social distancing make that any more complicated for people in your congregation?
Oh, 100%. Rather, as of right now, one of my biggest concerns is what can I do in order to salvage any bit of Ramadan for my community? The month of Ramadan, we not only, you know, fasting from prior to sunrise to sunset, we encourage, it's a month of where the holy text was also revealed, the Quran was revealed, so it's a month of the Quran, it's a month of getting close to our God, it's a month of practicing qualities which unfortunately get neglected throughout the year, implementing those within our lives. And we depend heavily upon the community, heavily upon congregating within the community, heavily upon our prayers that we perform throughout the night in our mosques. Now, all of that potentially not happening this year, it leaves me at a loss of words. Mm. But I do know that if I don't act now, as a leader of the community, I will not be able to salvage any bit of Ramadan for my community.
We have to go in just a minute, but Pastor Danker, I wanted to make sure that I touched on something. Some of your parishioners, many of them, as I understand it, work at a 3M factory nearby, right? And 3M makes face masks, which are so vital now in this time of response. What are your congregants saying about their role?
Yeah, so my church secretary is very part-time, and she's also a 3M employee. And so she told me that recently they only had about 3 people available to work in her particular department at the factory overnight because so many of them were on quarantine because they were concerned that one of the workers had contracted coronavirus. And of course, it takes time to get a test. The person didn't want to get a test, and then they did get a test, and then they were waiting for the results. So it's a huge burden, but also I think that there's a lot of pride that, you know, that our community in southwestern Minnesota and people who work at 3M, I mean, my communion schedule is based on the 3M schedule. When we have communion is based on the shifts at 3M, and same for our work service. So, you know, there is a lot of pride in that we can supply these masks, and, you know, I'm proud of that as well.
That's Pastor Angela Danker of the Grace Lutheran Church in Brownton, Minnesota. Pastor, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Imam Abdullah Al-Mahmoudi is the Imam of the Muslim Community Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Imam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Shira Stutman, Senior Rabbi at the 6th and I Synagogue here in Washington, D.C. Rabbi Shira, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
You know by now that we like to leave you each day with something a little bright in these stressful times. Every day, you know, thousands of acts of kindness are happening all across the country. Here's one from Kelly in Michigan.
I recently retired from working for years at the hospital, and there was one nurse that I became really good friends with who was probably 20 years younger than I am, but we were very good friends. And now I only see her maybe 3 or 4 times a year. The other day I got a text from her. It just said, wanting to know how you're doing. She didn't have any idea that I have been sick for 2 weeks with a lot of symptoms similar to the coronavirus. I'm doing okay, but she just knew that because I'm in my 70s and we were friends, she should check on me, and that meant so much.
Something as small as just reaching out. Thanks for sharing your story, Kelly. Hope you're feeling better. We appreciate it. We're doing this every day, by the way, so keep telling us what acts of kindness and empathy and solidarity are happening in your community. They can be big, they can be small, they can be virus-related, they can be totally unrelated. 855-236-1212 is the number. You can leave us a message on our free app, 1A Vox Pop. We want to hear from you. Kindness, and as I say, solidarity is happening all over America, and that's why we want to feature it here. This program was produced by James Morrison and edited by Matthew Simonson as part of our 1A Across America project. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, you can visit the website at the1a.org. 1A Across America is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This program comes to you from WAMU. It's part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.